Welcome to Not That Girl Anymore, part of the Liminal Network. I'm your host, Dawn Bouillon. This is more than a podcast. It's a sisterhood. We're reclaiming our voices, our worth, and our lives. One story, one truth, one brave step at a time. Hey, friends. Welcome back to Not That Girl Anymore. I'm your host, Dawn Bouillon, trauma therapist and coach, and the founder here of Embrace Your Brave. And this is a space where we talk about healing, we're reclaiming our voices, and we're stepping in the fullness of who we are meant to be. Here we honor the hard stories. We celebrate the courage it takes to heal, and we remind each other that we are not alone. Today is a very special day on our podcast because we have a guest. And our guest today is a very dear friend of mine, Ashley Woodard. And Ashley is an incredibly talented artist. I wish I could show you my birthday card that she painted for me. It's absolutely beautiful. You should be selling that somewhere, by the way, Ash. She has a gift for creating beauty and warmth in whatever she does and wherever she goes. Ashley's also pursuing a path in therapy or mental health coaching. And she's deeply passionate about creating spaces for honest conversations around healing, faith, and mental health. Ashley has played an essential role in our local Embrace Your Brave events, like Worthy, that we did last year, where her creativity with decorations, you had the place looking beautiful, Ashley, and all the food was just as pretty as the decorations. And you just helped us create something truly special and welcoming. So thank you again for that. But Ashley, it's not just her artistry that makes her so beautiful. It's also her story. She has walked through incredible pain and overcome so much. And out of that journey, she carries a very healing presence. Her heart is to help other women heal too. She brings resilience, compassion, and creative spirit into everything she does. And I am so honored to introduce her to you today. So Ashley, welcome. I'm so glad you're here.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. It is such an honor to be here with you. To just be able to be your friend and also be able to do this with you is such an honor.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited.
I'm excited too. So let's just jump right in, okay?
Okay.
So I want to start, Ash, by just asking you, could you give us a little maybe snapshot or share a little bit about what it was like for you as a child? Like, what stands out to you in those early years?
Yeah. So for me, growing up, I grew up in a family of 11 siblings. And we were, you know, Advent churchgoers. We went to church every Sunday, every Wednesday. We had like this really kind of, we were also homeschooled. So my parents were like the, you know, all-star 90s Christian parents. you know, they were super, they were very strict.
Yeah.
We couldn't cut our hair. We couldn't, you know, watch SpongeBob or, you know, Power Rangers or anything like that.
Wow.
But the thing was, is we had like, you know, this perfect facade that we put on. We were just like this big, happy family, like the Brady Bunch, you know, go to church. And then we would come home and it would be a totally different atmosphere. There was a lot of physical abuse, mental abuse. There was a lot of just controlling behaviors from my dad. He was very controlling of my mom. He was very controlling of us, and and he would abuse us as well as my mom. He would call it, he would call it discipline, but it was really just abuse. It was just we were having bruises and cuts, and I had my brother was like beat by a 2x4, and just extreme, discipline took him to the extreme to where it's abuse now. And he also would, cheat on my mom, and she would find out because his lovers would, contact her in some way, or she would find an email, or she'd find photos, or whatever it was, and she would confront him about it, and then he would lash out, and he would be like, "You're crazy. You're making this up. You're lying." Whatever the story that he could tell her to basically like break her down. And I even remember him, making her admit that she was lying, even though she wasn't, just like
Really?
making her admit that she was lying and that she was not telling the truth. And I remember he would take us into a room after an argument, and he would tell us, he would say, "Your mom's crazy. She's, lying. All the stuff she's saying is not true." And I remember just as a kid, just being so confused and being so just like, why am I even a part of this? Why am I even being pulled into this?
How old were you?
I think I was like probably, I mean, the first time that I remember, I think I was like 6 years old.
Six. Oh my goodness. Yeah, you're probably like, well, who's taking care of me? You know? And you said you have 11 siblings.
I do. I have 11 siblings.
And where are you at in the mix?
So I'm kind of a middle child.
Kind of, okay.
If there is one in that many siblings, but so I have four underneath me, and then I think it's six above me.
Wow.
So yeah, or three. No, three below me, and I think it's six.
There's too many to keep up.
So, and we also just we all took care of each other. Like we were very, which is kind of that's kind of a thing that happens in family. You learn to be responsible for, because the parents aren't necessarily, they can't do everything for everyone. But in my family, it was kind of taken to an extreme because I think we did a little bit, we were all kind of parentified. And we were all responsible for taking care of each other. And, like even my sister was like 5 years old, she was changing diapers. And my 10-year-old sister, she was cooking dinner. And, so just and doing laundry and just kind of things that I think parents should still be doing. Like we were all kind of just taking care of each other. And so that went on for a while.
So not much of a childhood. I mean,
No.
we are quickly skipping getting to be like a carefree little girl to like surviving.
Yeah, definitely.
What role do you see that you kind of played in the family as a 6-year-old? Like, were you already assuming those roles?
Yes. So we definitely had like the classic dysfunctional roles in the family, like the golden child, the scapegoats, the invisible children, the enablers, all of that. And I think for me, I was probably more so like an in between an invisible child and a scapegoat. Like I kind of waxed and waned in between the two, because I think I would step out and I would, try to say something or try to kind of like have my own perspective or have, a voice or be upset about the things that were happening or be like, this is not normal or like feel like something inside of me. Like, I just remember this feeling of just like something isn't right, like something's going on here. And I remember just kind of being, if you, in my family, being vulnerable, showing emotions, or, even crying about the abuse, crying about, what was happening, the abuse that was happening with my mom, whether it was the abuse that was happening with me, like we weren't really allowed to like feel sad about it. If you felt sad about it, you were considered like a victim. You were considered, like if you displayed any healthy emotions related to the trauma, you were considered a victim. You were considered just sensitive. You were just being too sensitive. You were, whatever the word is that they would use, it was just too much. Like that was not, it was not acceptable to mourn kind of what was happening in our family or feel any sort of normal, healthy emotions towards the abuse that was happening.
I mean, I'm just imagining Ashley being 6 years old and seeing that just the violence. I mean, just like I'm imagining how terrifying that must have been for you, just like day in, day out, probably like what's going to happen next, or how did you like survive that?
So when the abuse would happen, usually I would go and we would hide in the closet and I'd have my three other young siblings with me and we'd usually pray and we'd say, just think about ice cream, just think about ice cream. And that was like what we did. We'd just be like, just think about something good, and we would just pray and kind of just hope and wait for it to end. I didn't realize until I was much older that what was happening in my family was not normal. What was happening in my family was very dysfunctional.
So as a kid, you just thought it was normal.
Yeah, I thought everybody was experiencing what I was experiencing.
Really? Oh my goodness. So did anybody comfort you?
No, I don't remember, anybody necessarily comforting me. I just remember like comforting my younger siblings, and just trying to, I think I was kind of put into that role too as like a caretaker and a, as a naturally empathetic person, I was kind of put into the role of caretaking. And I remember like, even my younger sister, I used to sing her lullabies to sleep at night, and like, read her stories or whatever. And I was only 2 years older than her, but I'm singing lullabies to her to help her fall asleep. So I think I was kind of just put into that role. And so when those things would happen, I would just go into my role and I would go to protect, the little ones and kind of make sure that they were okay.
So you said your mom and dad's relationship was really volatile. Like it was, what was your relationship like with your mom and dad?
I kind of just, my dad, I was very scared of him. And so I would kind of just like hide. I didn't want to step on any toes because it was like walking on eggshells. Like you didn't know, if he was going to explode, if he was going to be angry, if he was going to be happy. Like I just didn't know what version of him I would get. And so I just kind of stayed away because I was like, I don't want to rock the boat. And so with him, and then my mom, she was kind of in her own world. And so Every once in a while, I felt like she would kind of like, be interested maybe in us a little bit, or she would talk to us a little bit. But for the most part, she kind of just stayed in her own little world, and she didn't really, she wasn't, both of my parents weren't really interested in us as, or at least me as a person. Like, they never asked us, hey, how was your day? Or, hey, how was school today? Or, how's your grades? How's your friendships? Things that I would ask my kids, like, how's your day? How's your kids? I mean, how's your kids? How's your friends? How's, I know the ins and outs of my kids' days. Like, I know their best friends. I know the drama that's going on, and
Absolutely.
I'm keeping up on all that stuff. And those are the things that my parents just, they didn't know. I think they just didn't know me at all.
Wow, just thinking about that right now, like what comes up for you just thinking about that for little Ashley?
That just makes me feel so sad. I remember, and I remember just feeling like, always feeling like I wish somebody could see me. That was just a feeling like I always wish that I was adopted too.
Really?
Like,
That
I did.
makes sense.
Yeah, I always wished, I was like, I wish someone would just see me and get to know me, and then they would just adopt me, and they would just like take me out of this situation.
Like kind of fantasize about that.
I
Like,
did. Yeah, I did. I definitely did. And even as a teenager, I remember still being like, man, I wish, just I just wanted to be known. I just wanted someone to see me and be like, she matters, and she, just see all the good things, because I had so many good characteristics in me that were just being used and abused. Like my empathy and my tender heart and my, I was very intelligent, which I didn't know that, but I was very intelligent, and was just being completely overlooked, and my art, and just all of those things that I was so talented in that nobody really saw, nobody really noticed. And I feel like that was kind of a thing in my family too. It was like, if you were good at something, like, I had a sister who was a really talented dancer, and she was so talented. She was the most talented out of all of the siblings. And I remember, because she was so talented, they kind of like honed in on her and would be like, oh, you're just trying to get attention. You're just trying, just for being a good dancer. They would be like, you're just trying to get attention. You're just trying to be famous, whatever, blah, 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 like all these things, when she was just being herself. And just,
From her parents, the
yeah, the parents
people
and
that were
the kids.
supposed to be lifting her up and celebrating her, they were putting her down. That's sad. But you noticed that?
Notice what?
Oh, you noticed that they did that to her?
Oh, yeah. I do. I was thinking about this the other day, because I was like, I still see it showing up, and it's just that whole dynamic of, we can't take the spotlight off the
Oh,
narcissist.
I'm just gonna throw that word out there.
Yeah. Because I would say my dad would definitely be a narcissist. Like, definitely a classic. I thought he was maybe just like bipolar and a sociopath, but I'm starting to realize now, I'm like, no, he was a narcissist. Like, he was, and I don't use that term lightly. And he was like a classic narcissist. He was very grandiose. He was very, very charismatic. He would walk into the room, and he just, people would just be drawn to him. And some people saw through the facade. Some people saw through the performance. But
And he used religion too.
yes. Yeah, he actually, what's crazy is he used the Bible to validate why he was beating my mom.
Wow.
He was like, I don't remember the scripture verse, but it was some scripture verse about basically putting your wife in line.
Oh.
And he would be like, yeah, this is like why I'm doing what I'm doing. So that was really confusing for me.
Yeah.
And let me back up too. Let me back up. So he would use the Bible and yeah, he would say those things like, oh yeah, this is why I'm putting her in line. This is why I'm doing the things I'm doing, and it's here, it's right here in the Bible. Which was just total misuse of scripture altogether. Obviously, thank God, but yeah. So that was really confusing for me because I was just like, how can God condone this? How is God okay with this? How is God okay with this treatment with someone being treated this way, with someone being beaten, with someone being, she would have bruises and he would pull her arm out of socket or, like just crazy stuff. Like he would put a gun to her head and
Oh.
tell her that he was going to shoot her, like threaten to kill her.
Wow.
We even had a session where we trying to think of how to say this, but we basically like she was demon possessed, and we were, what is it called when they take demons out of people?
Oh, trying to exercise
We're
the.
doing an exorcism.
Okay.
Yes,
Wow.
so we he like had us all like push her down to the bed. And I
Y'all
remember
had to participate.
we all had to participate. We were pushing her down on the bed, her arms and her legs. And I remember it was in their bedroom. We were like pushing her down. I remember she's just like screaming and crying. And he's on top of her and he's like pushing her head into the bed and like screaming at her and I guess praying or, whatever.
Wow.
And I remember just being so sad and being so just like, this doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
But if I know if I stopped, I'm going to be the next person on that bed.
Oh my goodness, just
Like, I'm going to be.
terrifying.
Yeah.
Wow. You had to participate out of survival so that you wouldn't be the next one that's being abused. Golly, Ashley, just that my heart just breaks for you just to think about you being a little girl trying to survive that and make sense of it, trying to make sense of that and even making sense of God if God's okay with that.
And that's a big thing. When I was a teenager, I didn't want anything to do with God.
Wow, yeah,
Like,
that makes sense.
this is God. I don't want any part in that.
Right. I mean, I can't blame you for that. My goodness. So yeah, let's kind of shift into your teenage years. How did you recognize those things in your life as you got older? Did you have anyone to like talk to about anything, or you're still just holding on to all this yourself?
I was pretty open about what was going on once. So he went to jail when I was 13.
Oh, okay. So he did get some consequences.
Yes, he went to prison for I think 3 or 4 years. And that was when we all kind of, or at least me and my two older siblings, we were very like more vocal about what was going on in the home, what had been going on in our home.
Okay. So,
And now
did somebody call the cops? Like, did somebody?
No, we had CPS come to our house and all of that before this too. Like he didn't go to jail for the abuse though. He went to jail for something else.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you had CPS at your house like all the time?
I remember at least like four or five times like that. I remember them being there, and I remember just like sitting there eating my ramen noodles and just like smiling and pretending like we were a big happy family and just being like, this, we're normal.
Oh
You
my
know?
goodness.
Yeah. We had to put on a big, sh we had to put on a show, which we were good at it because we did it every time we went out in public. So it was kind of like, okay, we're just putting on the performance now in our house. For CPS now.
Really? Wow. Oh my goodness. That reminds me of that documentary. I don't know if you've seen it yet, The Shiny Happy People.
No, I need to see it.
It's like I almost say like proceed with caution, but it's very validating of people that have experienced this type of religious trauma, you know. But like they all have like smiley faces, you know, and I'm just like, oh man, like
That was us. We looked so perfect. Like you would have never guessed what was going on.
you became like good actors
We
or
were excellent
pretenders.
performers. Excellent performers.
Wow. Out of survival. Out of survival. So you were a teenager when your dad went to jail.
Yes. So he, I was 13. I remember going to public school for the first time, in a not so great area. So that was very different, being homeschooled and really, really sheltered for
Okay.
most of, for half of my life or most of my life at that point. And then transitioning to, going to a public school in a not great area. And I remember just like, people would fight all the time. Like there would be like fights breaking out, and there would be like people would cuss at each other, which I wasn't used to that. I was like,
Hey, don't cuss.
if somebody was mad at me, they were calling me a B word, and I'd be like, oh my God, like I've never been called that in my life.
Little culture shock.
Yes, major culture shock. And yeah, and I remember, my mom, she just went into this major depressive state, even more so than I think she was before. I think she had always kind of struggled with it.
Okay.
But she had gone into this, major depressive state, almost like catatonic, where,
Oh.
she would kind of just, she would leave really early in the morning before we'd go to school. She would come back like 8 or 9 o'clock at night, most days. And so we were kind of, and I was 13, I had three younger siblings that were all like a couple years behind me. And so we were all pretty young. And
Yeah.
so at the time, I think it was just, there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 of us in the house still.
Okay.
The oldest being Thea, which she would have been, if I was 13, she would have been like 16, I think, or 17. So the older kids, they did the laundry. They sometimes make sure that we had food. My mom, she also, we didn't have food in the house. And so there was a lot of times where we didn't have food, where we just went without, we didn't have a meal. And I remember my older sister, she would always make sure our uniforms were clean. She would always put them in the wash for us. And then, I don't even know. I don't even know what we did for food because we never had food.
Wow.
So I think sometimes I would just like eat a can of tuna for dinner, if we had a can of tuna, or, sometimes we just went without because we didn't have anything in the house. So that was kind of like a normal occurrence for us, was just like kind of figuring out, school, and then figuring out how to feed ourselves, how to take care of ourselves, how to make sure our needs are being met. And there was like holes in the floor of the trailer, because there was a leak in the door, in the front and the back door. They were not like sealed, and so anytime it would rain, the rain would like come rushing in. I remember the bottom of the door, and so we'd have to put like towels down to like get all the water from, and slowly that deteriorated the floorboards, and then holes, like they started to have holes in them. So there was holes there, there was holes for some reason near where the AC units, where the ducts on the floor used to be. There was holes there too, like around where the little thing, the metal thing used to be. There's like holes in the floor right there. So you could look down and I could literally see the ground. Yeah. It was wild.
Wow.
And we didn't have AC or heat. And so we had window units. And then during the winters, we would turn on the oven and we'd open the door to the oven. And that was the heat for the house.
Oh, wow.
So it was, we were very, very poor.
It sounds like you guys were also you figured some stuff out. Like you figured out how to heat your house.
Yeah, definitely did. We definitely did.
Wow.
Yeah, so I got a job as soon as I was able to. I was like, I think they hired me like a couple weeks before I actually turned 16. I found a place that they were like, yeah, we'll hire you, but it needs to be like 2 weeks before you turn 16, because like legally you can't work till you're 16. And so yeah, I got a job at a restaurant. I paid for my phone bill, I paid my car insurance, I paid my gas, I paid for all my uniforms for school, I paid for all my books, like anything that I possibly, all my food, like I would buy food for the house. Anytime we ate out, I would have to pay for my food, which our version of eating out was like the dollar menu at McDonald's.
So
But
you were doing that at 16? Wow.
I was, and I was really, I mean, completely responsible for myself in every area. And I remember even the volleyball coach. Like, I was one day, I remember I was in PE, and I was playing a game with this guy. He was like 6 foot something, and he was holding up a basketball with his arm in the air, and I was running and I was jumping and I was hitting the ball out of his hand, like just for fun. And like we made a game out of it. And I remember the volleyball coach came up to me and she was like, hey, would you want to join the team? And I was like, I'm sorry, I can't. And she was like, I don't understand. She's like, I think you'd be really great at this. Like, you should join the team. And I remember telling her, I was like, I can't, I don't have money to buy uniforms. I don't have money for the equipment. Like, I don't have a ride to school. I wouldn't have a ride back from practice, because I rode the bus until I got a car when I was like 17 or 18. And so I was like, I don't have a ride. And she, offered to help me, but then I was like, no. Like, I knew it was gonna just be too complicated for me to try to, like, do all of those things on top of my work and my job and just everything at home. And so, and that still breaks my heart to this day. I'm like, man, I wish that,
Me too.
I would have had that opportunity to just like play a sport or to just be a kid,
Absolutely.
just to be a normal teenage kid.
Yeah. You didn't get to be a kid and do kid things.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so sad. What's kind of coming up for you just as you think about that?
I think just sadness, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
It's okay. Who's gonna cry for that little girl?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think there's so many other kids too that, you know, experience those things. And that just breaks my heart, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. You know you're not the only one. Yeah, absolutely. And it's so brave for you to let that little girl share her story right now.
Yeah.
You know, because it matters and it matters to you. And, you know, what do you wish that little girl knew? Just right now.
I think I wish that she just knew that she was loved, that she was important,
Yeah.
you know, and that her needs and her wants mattered. And that she didn't just need to take care of everybody else
Right.
and do for everybody else, and that it was okay for her to just take care of herself.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Tears are healing, Ash, you know? Because that pain matters.
Yeah.
So I'm really proud of you for sharing that and for letting yourself feel for that little girl in you who missed out on playing volleyball, missed out on being a kid, and missed out on, you know, just being carefree and even having, you know, experiences like that where you're playing on the volleyball court and you have your people in the stands cheering for you, you know,
Yeah.
just all the things that you deserved to have as a little girl. You still deserve that. And I'm cheering for you.
Yeah, and that's been a huge part of my healing too, is just letting myself, just investing in myself.
Yeah.
You know, just investing in all those things that I never got to do as a little girl.
That's right.
You know, all the, because I was so busy surviving
Yeah.
that I never got to meet my needs, to have a need, ask somebody, you know, if I can't meet it myself, to ask somebody else, like, hey, I need this. And then to have people show up.
Yeah.
That's honestly, and honestly, that's like one of the hardest parts too, is letting people show up. You know, because it can be so heart-wrenching when people start showing up. Because then
Yeah.
it's like you realize how much of that you missed out on.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's like bittersweet. You're thankful that they're showing up now, but like heart breaks for that little girl that nobody showed up for.
Yes, it really is.
Yeah. You're so brave to give her a voice today. So these were teenage years, right?
Oh, and there's one thing too I want to mention about teenagers too.
Yeah.
So, and I kind of mentioned this earlier too, but I do want to like kind of go over this. Oh, and what it was like too.
Yeah.
So once my dad got out of prison, he would, show up at our house unannounced. He would yell, scream, threaten, just very, very intimidating. He was also like 6 foot. He was very buff. He would work out, all of that. So he was a very intimidating person.
Wow.
And he would come over, he'd scream at us, tell us we were demon possessed, or whatever, we were of the devil, just like whatever he could throw at us to try to scare us. And he would also steal things from us, which I still don't understand. Like he would steal like all of our silverware. Like one day we'd come home and like all the silverware would be gone.
Wow.
Or like our we had a water cooler and it had like the big 5 gallon water thing or whatever, and had like a water cooler. So
Yeah,
he
yeah.
like came and stole our water cooler. And I remember just like going to his house after that and then like seeing his our water cooler at his house and seeing like our silverware. And like my mom never said anything. She never confronted him on it. Like it was just kind of like, oh, I guess we got to get more silverware. I guess we got to get, well, we never got a new water filter, but yeah,
Oh.
that was just kind of like our day-to-day life. And
Like he took your basic needs.
from his own children,
Yeah.
which I still to this day, I'm like, I can't imagine. I don't even know why, how, like I just can't even fathom.
Can't wrap your brain around that type of evil.
Yeah. No, not at all. Just the cruelty. Just very,
Yeah.
very cruel to steal from your own children, and your wife who's struggling to support them. And she also, he didn't pay child support. So she and my oldest brother supported us alone. My oldest brother basically stepped in as a parent and he supported my mom financially for like 8 years after that, all of that happened.
Wow.
So, and I remember at that time too, just being like so angry with God and so like, why? And really just like if this is who you are, I want nothing to do with you. Just being so angry with God and so angry with all the things that had been excused and swept under the rug in the name of God, in the just all the cruel, evil things that had happened.
That makes so much sense, Ashley. I mean, it sounds like, God was abusive. He was maybe your first narcissistic abuser, if that's the same as your dad and he's okay with what your dad does. That's such a very confusing, scary thing to like have to think about and make sense of.
It was very, very confusing. And I remember I stopped going to church and I was just like, I don't want anything to do with this. This is not the shit that I want to be involved in.
Exactly.
I don't want anything to do with that. Like, God
Yeah.
can stay over there. And yeah, so that was a big thing for a while. And like my church friends were a big part of my life for a long time,
Okay.
And so for me to kind of step away from that and be like, no, I'm not doing that anymore. Like I'm, whatever. And I'd gotten into like partying. I started drinking, which honestly, looking back, I remember my siblings and my mom made a really big deal about it, about me being like going to parties. But like, I was like a really good kid.
You.
like got drunk like maybe three times, maybe two times. Like not hardly at all. I didn't like go and kiss boys at parties. I didn't like sleep around. I was just like having fun, like just being just being a kid. And I didn't even think about those things. I remember wishing that I could like kiss a boy at a party, but I was like too shy and too afraid to like, and I was always like kissing someone was like I wanted to be interested in you. Like I had to have a relationship with that person to like kiss them. I couldn't just like kiss a guy because I thought he was cute. Like that was just not my thing. That wasn't my MO. Yeah, and that was another thing too with my older siblings. I was kind of lumped in with my two older sisters, but they kind of went like crazy, which I think is normal for if you're being so sheltered, if you're being so controlled, to finally have freedom and you just kind of go crazy. Like that happens a lot. So I was kind of lumped in with them, and I was kind of labeled as like, this rebellious, this whatever child that I was doing all these things, and I was, going to parties and I was drinking and I was booty dancing and
I've seen that
And I was good at it. So
You were
I
trying to be a kid, dude. You were
don't
trying to like actually enjoy your life a little bit,
know.
even in the most responsible way. It sounds like you were still a good girl, even in your acting out.
I was. I had, yeah. Craziness. But yeah, so that was kind of my high school, and then my senior year before my so 2 weeks before Christmas, my senior year of high school, my dad. So my mom, first off, she came to me like it was late at night, and she was like, "Hey," and mind you, I'm 17. My little brothers are 13 and 12, I think at the time. And she's like, "Hey, they're concerned about your dad. Like they think he might, try to do something or hurt himself. Can you take your little brothers and go and check on him?" And I was like, "No, I cannot. Like, absolutely not." I was like, "If he's gonna hurt himself, he's probably gonna take me and, my brothers with him. Like, I'm not gonna, no." So I was like, "Absolutely not." And the next day, my oldest brother went to check on him because they had like done a wellness checkup, which is when they ask the cops to go and like check on him. But they can't like break down a door or, anything like that unless like he'd have to open the door and like let them in, basically. And he didn't. He didn't let them in or anything. So they had no right to break down the door or anything like that. And so my brother went the next day, and he found him in the bathtub and he had committed suicide. Yeah. And I remember the next day waking up. It was a Mo I think it was a Monday. And I had finals that week. And I remember them. I woke up in the morning and like all my siblings were there. And I was just like, "What is happening?" And they sat us down and they said, "Hey, dad committed suicide last night." Kind of. And I remember just the room being just like silent. Like it was just kind of like we all were just in shock. We were all just kind of like, what just happened? And they were like, I remember my mom was like, "You can go to school if you want to, but you don't have to," kind of thing. And I was just like, "No, I'm gonna go to school." Like, so I went to school that day, and I remember going up to my best friend because I think I wanted to go to school too because I wanted to like distract. from what I just
Shame.
heard. Like, I didn't want to face it, and I felt like nobody was really crying and like mourning. Everyone was just kind of like there, you
Yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And so I was kind of like, I knew that I needed to get out of that situation. And I knew that I needed to like kind of go somewhere where I was safe, and school was like one of those places where it was a safe place.
Yeah.
And so I remember that morning just kind of like trying to hold it all together, trying to still smile, trying to, still act normal. And I remember going up to my best friend at the time, and she was just like, "Hey, girl, blah, blah, blah." Like, she was super high energy, super fun. And I
Yeah.
remember just being like, "Hey, I need to tell you something." And we sat down, and I told her that my dad had committed suicide. And she was just like, we just started bawling our eyes out crying. And it was just,
Wow.
so sad.
Yeah.
And I remember just throughout the day, I just kind of like tried to keep, a cheery face, tried to kind of keep it all together and not break. And I remember I had like a French final that day. And I made it until like almost my last class of the day. And then I finally just broke down during my final because I was just like, I can't even like focus right now.
Yeah.
And I just broke down, and my teacher, and this teacher, he was like a really, really hard guy. Like, he was an old man. He would say like the meanest stuff to us. And when he saw me, he was like, "Are you okay?" And I told him what happened, and he was like, "It's okay. You don't have to take the final." Like, just that kindness that I was like,
Yeah.
shocked by the kindness even.
Right. Wow.
Yeah. And it was so crazy. I for the longest time, I didn't cry. Like, I hardly ever cried. I didn't allow myself to cry about any of it. And I'm realizing now too that that has a lot to do with PTSD. Because with PTSD, you tend to like disconnect yourself from the situation and from yourself in that moment to kind of like get through it, like to kind of be able to still remain intact. You almost you do the depersonalization, and you do the derealization of like, that wasn't me. Because sometimes it still feels that way, like that
Yeah.
happened, like all of that happened to somebody else, but it didn't. It all happened to me.
Wow.
And I'm still learning to cry about all of it. And I do cry now, and I could really fall apart. But I'm
Yeah.
gonna hold it together for you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just, that was something that, looking back, I'm like, man, that was such a terrible, terrible, terrible thing
Yeah,
for someone to have gone through.
17, you know, that really didn't have support to get through that.
No. Yeah, none at all.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so I, with that, I decided,
Whew.
I decided, I was like, I'm gonna do something for God.
Wow, Ashley's story is just so moving. The honesty, the courage she carries really draws you in. And this is only the beginning. Next week, she's going to share how she began to take her power back and create a life that feels true and free. You don't want to miss it. Until then, remember, friend, you matter and you're not that girl anymore. Hey, friend, just a quick note. I am a licensed therapist, but this podcast isn't therapy. It's not meant to diagnose or treat anything. It's here to offer you support, encouragement, and real conversation. If you're struggling, please reach out to a trusted professional. You are not alone, and you are so worthy of healing. Even if your voice shakes, keep using it. Your healing matters. If you're ready to go deeper, you can book a session by clicking the link in the show notes or visiting our website, embraceyourbrave.org, to learn more about our therapy and trauma-informed coaching options. Let's explore how we can walk this journey together. You are not alone. Embrace your brave, sis. You're not that girl anymore.